and I see Miles standing at the back of the boat, Julia and Starfire and Dad swimming in lazy circles in the sparkling water, I think of what Starfire said. It does feel like a rebirth. People can change, I think. I'm changing. We eat dinner at Jesse's table, a farm-to-table spot with a deck overlooking the water. I'm pink-cheeked and nosed from the day in the sun, while Dad's, Julia's, and Miles's tans have only deepened. Starfire is bright red but unbothered.
"It'll turn into a tan by tomorrow,"
she told me when I offered her aloe back at the apartment, between the boat ride and the restaurant. As soon as we're seated, Dad sweet-talks the host into taking an order for a bottle of wine. When the server arrives a minute later, Dad asks for recommendations on appetizers, and she lists six or so. He orders one of each, for the table. I feel my first ping of anxiety in hours, imagining Dad nonchalantly telling our server to split the check evenly at the end of the night. I'm trying to do the math in my head to figure out whether I can cover Julia's and Miles's portion of these things they decidedly did not order. But everyone's in a great mood, tipsy on the sunshine and wine and the barbershop quartet practicing on the gravel patio of the ice cream shop two doors down. By the time we make it through the appetizers, we've polished off the Pinot Blanc. Dad slips off to use the restroom, smoke in a stall, and comes back announcing he's ordered champagne so we can toast my birthday along with his and Starfire's nuptials. She's barely touched her first glass, instead devoting her full focus to peppering me with questions about my childhood. It strikes me that Miles is right, that the key to being able to talk to anyone might just be curiosity. But it also takes a kind of fearlessness to invite someone into your space and ask to be invited into theirs. I can, a little too easily, imagine hanging up a needlepoint encouraging me to be more like Starfire. Even when her questions lead to yet more proof that my father wasn't actually around for my childhood, she shows no visible signs of disappointment, just shoots a follow-up question my way. I try to ask her things, too, and she answers easily. Yes, she grew up in Vermont. She was on the ski team at her school. She's been a vegetarian since birth. She has six siblings, all of them brothers. But she ends every response with a new question for me. Meanwhile, our server, who clearly loves Dad, brings out three off-menu offerings from the chef. On the house. While we're eating our main courses, Julia and Starfire compare their birth charts and have the kind of conversation about water signs that's indecipherable to non-astrology people. Dad asks Miles about work and excitedly pitches the idea of going for dinner tomorrow at the winery once I'm off work.
"If you're not too sick of it," Dad says to me. "Don't know how often you eat there."
"We can go there if you want," I say.
"Oh, and we have to go see Daffy at the library,"
Starfire puts in.
"You should go on Saturday so you can see Story Hour,"
Julia volunteers.
"What's Story Hour?"
Dad asks. "It's just when I read to a group of kids," I say.
"She does the voices," Julia adds.
"Does she?"
Dad's eyes light up.
"Like that one gal at the old library we used to go to. What was her name? Leanna?"
He definitely should know her name since he briefly dated her. Afterward, I noticed we started frequenting a different branch.
"How did you get started at the library anyway?" Starfire asks. "Did you always want to do that?"
I couldn't feel more exposed if I'd unzipped my skin and poured my innards onto the table.
"Bet I know the answer to that one," Dad says.
I can't decide if that makes it better or worse. He sets his elbows on the table and leans forward.
"When Daphne was little, she was a big-time reader, and I had this girlfriend who worked at a bookstore, got a huge discount, so I'd always bring books when I came to visit. But me and Holly, Daph's mom, neither of us really had disposable income, per se, so I always got in trouble with her. I'd get Daphne the first book in a series, or worse, the second, and then Holly would have to buy her the first. She finally told me she wanted me to stop bringing presents, thought I was trying to buy Daphne off."
He rolls his eyes as he says this, but also shoots Julia a wink.
"Maybe a bit," Anyway, we compromised. I'd take Daph to the library every time I was in town instead. You'd think I'd brought her to Disneyland. Put this girl in a room full of books, and she's happier than anyone I've met. Never understood it myself, but it was cute as hell to watch her stack up as many as she could carry and slide them onto a desk higher than her forehead to check them out.
Starfire puts a hand over her heart at this. My own is beating a little fast, uncomfortably. His telling of it feels so different from my own memory. What loomed so large for me, bigger even than the magic of being surrounded by bright colors and free books, was being excited to show him what I'd found, wandering the stacks in search of him, finally spotting him flirting with a librarian, hardly aware of me there waiting for his attention. One of my earliest memories of joy, and one of the first times I realized I'd always come in second.
Excuse me. I push back from the table and stand. I've got to use the restroom.
I serpentine through the tables on the deck into the restaurant, adjusting to the dim Edison bulb chandeliers before cutting over to the bathroom hallway. Both are occupied, but it's not that I needed to pee so much as I needed to breathe while I wait out this confusing torrent of feelings. I lean against the gilded wallpaper and close my eyes, willing my heart to slow.
You okay?
Comes a soft voice. I open my eyes. Miles steps uncertainly into the hallway.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Fine, I say. Bathroom's in use. He nods.
Then I'll leave you to it.
He turns away, and I feel this desperation. To let it out, or just to keep him here a moment longer. I never know how to feel when he's around. I blurt. Miles turns, considers for a moment. He walks back and leans into the wall beside me.
Somebody recently told me that feelings are like the weather. They just kind of happen.
I try to force a smile. Sounds like she has no idea what she's talking about.
She's very smart,
he says.
And hot, if that's relevant.
The glow in my chest isn't strong enough to break up all the dark clouds churning in there.
He's being so nice,
I say weakly. Miles thinks about this for a second.
It seems like it, yeah.
So why am I upset? I say.
Maybe because when he's nice, it's hard to be mad at him.
He takes my hand gingerly.
And you are, so then you feel bad about that.
Maybe, I say. Then, maybe exactly. He pulls me into his chest and winds his arms around me. Warm, friendly, familiar Miles, and it surprises me how much it hurts to be this close to him, how it only seems to underscore that I won't be any closer.
We can run if you want,
he murmurs. Dine and dash, I say. I'm appalled at you, Miles Nowak.
More like pay on the way out, he says, and take a speed limit abiding cab somewhere they can't find us.
We couldn't do that. Julia would end up along for the ride to Vermont. Next thing we know, she'd be taking steroids and training for the women's Olympic ski team.
She can hold her own, he says.
So can I argue. He draws back to look into my face.
I know, he says. I just don't want you to have to.
I look toward the deck, blinking back the rising emotion.
The truth is, he seems different. Is that bad?
I shake my head. No, I don't want to trust him. I don't want to be disappointed.
I made my peace with how things have always been between us, I admit. It took me a long time to stop expecting more than he'd give me. That makes sense,
Miles says, tucking my hair behind my ear. I don't want to go back to feeling unsteady. I don't want it to hurt every time he lets me down. I already feel it again, the aching emptiness where my dad's love should be. And this time, I don't have my mom nearby, or Peter and the Collinses to fill the gaps. And no matter how genuinely nice Starfire is, it doesn't change the fact that she's a woman who paid someone actual money to recount the plot of Titanic to her as a prophecy, and she is worthy of Dad's love when I never have been. Just like Petra is worthy of Peter's. Just like Peter is worthy of the commitment of all those friends from whom I'd worked tirelessly to earn approval since we moved here. The ones who had no time for me since the breakup. Still worthy of Sadie's love after I'd stopped being so. Life isn't a competition, and neither is love, but I'm still the loser. A frown creases Miles's forehead as he cups my chin. I shake my head. I just want it to be real. What? He says.
The memories he has of us,
I whisper.
This visit. I want to believe it all means something.
Maybe it does, he says.
The bathroom door opens behind us, and his hand falls away as we press ourselves against the wall to let the emerging man slink past. As he goes, he finishes tucking his dress shirt back into his pants and eyes us with unbridled suspicion. He 100% thinks we're doing a drug deal, I say.
Don't be ridiculous, he says. He at least 50% thinks we're having an illicit affair.
We both smile at our feet.
So where do you want to go? He asks. Back to the table or out the front door?
Table. I tip my head toward the open bathroom door. Just give me a minute.
I'd give the bathroom a minute, he says. That guy had the face of someone who just did something ungodly.
I catch our server on my way through the restaurant to the deck. Could you make sure you put the shared plates on my tab? I ask. Wish I could. She's holding her hands up in surrender. The older gentleman already picked everything up.
Really? I say. You're sure?
He was adamant the bill not make it to the table, she replies. I thank her and walk back to my seat, slightly dazed. As soon as I've sunk back into my chair, a crowd of servers files through the restaurant's back door onto the deck, carrying a chocolate cake lit with a sparkler.
Happy late birthday, honey,
Dad says, right before the staff begins to sing. Thanks, Dad, I say, voice disappearing into the chorus of voices.
It's nothing,
he murmurs, squeezing my arm atop the table. But he looks relieved, or maybe pleased. Like my happiness has made him happy. And suddenly, my eyes are stinging and heat is rushing up the back of my nose. I focus on the blue gold sparks shooting off the cake so I won't crack. After dessert, we pick our way down the deck stairs to the beach. Miles brought towels in a backpack, and we stretch out, waiting as the sky darkens, stars gradually pricking through it. Out on the water, someone has decided to shoot off fireworks from their boat. A hum, a gasp, a sigh ripple through the beach's stragglers. One streak of light pops, explodes into a shivering purple blossom. Two more quickly follow on either side, pink and gold. Kids shriek and squeal and run circles around their adults, popsicles and ice cream cones melting down their wrists. Dad and Starfire strike up a conversation with a couple around their age standing near us, and Julia is down on the ground taking selfies with a shaggy Great Pyrenees sprawling in the sand. Even with the sulfuric smell hanging in the air, I can still pick out the gingery kick of Miles beside me.
Good night, he asks,
a fresh wave of fireworks making his face shimmer with greens and oranges. Great night. He smiles and faces forward, the back of his hand brushing mine. My heart feels like a present unwrapped, my body relaxing. For the first time, I let myself really imagine this lasting. All of it. Dad and Starfire, Ashley and Julia, Waning Bay, Miles. I could be happy here. I could belong. 26. I plan on saying goodnight to Dad and Starfire at our apartment and sending them on their way. Then I make the mistake of Googling their motel. Dad, I say, this is 40 minutes away and the first 3 reviews mentioned bedbugs.
Everything closer to the water books up a year out, apparently, he tells me.
I scroll down. The reviews that don't mention bedbugs focus instead on cockroaches. Yet another reviewer complains that their room didn't have a bed.
Just a rust-colored outline where the bed should have been, I read aloud to them.
I'm sure if they give us a room without a bed, they'll let us move for free,
Starfire volunteers. I shoot Miles a frantic look.
Anyone want water? He chimes in. Daphne, wanna help me?
We beeline for the kitchen, ignoring their protestations that they're fine, it's been hours since they drank that wine, they should get on the road, etc. When Miles pulls glasses down, he says under his breath,
What do you want to do?
We can't let them stay in that place,
I whisper back.
We can, he says, but we don't have to. It's up to you.
What other option do we have? I say.
I could let them use the air mattress and I take the couch,
Julia says, making me jump as she walks into the room.
Not getting water, then?
Working on it, Miles says.
Then, more quietly,
Just trying to figure out what to do about this. I don't think we can ask 2 60-something-year-olds to sleep on an air mattress.
I'll take the couch. Julia can stick with the inflatable, and they can take my room, I say.
No, don't be ridiculous, he says. They can take my room, and I'll take the couch.
How is that any less ridiculous, I say. They're my parents, or my dad and my Starfire.
Are you sure you're okay with this?
He asks. For tonight, I say. Tomorrow, we can look for a hotel that's less
infested,
Julia finishes. That, I agree.
If you're sure,
Miles says. I haven't been sure of much in the last few months. Close enough, I say. While Miles takes his turn in the bathroom queue, I get Dad and Starfire settled into my room with fresh bedding.
Really appreciate this, kid,
Dad says.
We would have been okay at the motel.
Yeah, well, this way you don't take bed bugs to Starfire's family, I say. He gives me a hug goodnight, an awkward kiss atop my head, and when we separate, Starfire is waiting, arms out wide to reveal her baby blue nightgown. Good night, Starfire, I say, accepting her tight squeeze.
Good night, sweetie,
she says.
And if you want, you can call me Mom.
Oh, that's... I'll stick with Starfire, but I hope you sleep well. I close the door behind me on my way out. Julia is in the process of dragging her air mattress toward Miles's room, and I hurry over to help. We agreed it made more sense to put her in there, because if we left the mattress in the cramped living room, there'd be no way for me to get off the couch without stepping on her. Given how many times I can pee in one night, that seemed impractical. We unroll the rumpled air mattress in front of Miles's closet doors, and while she gets the pump going, I bring her tangle of bedding in from the living room. Thanks for being up for this, I tell her when she turns the pump off and we start making the bed.
No problem, she says.
Honestly, I'm just taking this as a sign it's time for me to get back to Chicago and get the rest of my stuff and my car.
Have you talked to Miles about it anymore? I say.
What is there to talk about? She says.
I hesitate. Did something happen in Chicago? She flops down on her mattress and pulls the quilt up to her chin, her face steely.
Can you turn off the overhead on your way out?
Sure, I say. Sleep tight. In the dark living room, I make a nest on the couch. The bathroom door creaks open, tendrils of light reaching toward me. Miles steps out in a cloud of steam, his hair damp, the little wet spots around the collar of his camel t-shirt making the fabric cling to him in a vaguely suggestive way.
I could have made it myself, he whispers, padding over.
I go back to tucking the blankets in.
Why would you make my bed?
Because it's not your bed, it's mine, he says.
Says who?
I say.
Says the person who owns the couch, he says.
I stop what I'm doing and face him. The bathroom light licks at the right side of his face while shadow covers the left.
Take my bed, he says.
I grab a pillow and fluff it.
You'd be doing me a favor, he says. Julia and I have never shared a room in our lives, and for all I know, she yodels in her sleep.
He pulls the throw pillow out of my hands and steps closer.
Daphne,
he says.
Would you please do me the honor of sleeping in my bed?
Every single one of my nerve endings prickle. I know he didn't mean it how it sounds. So I respond, very naturally. Starfire told me I could call her mom. Miles chokes over a laugh.
Does it make you feel better or worse that she said the same thing to me?
It makes me want to buy her a dictionary, I say. He swallows a snort of laughter. When it settles, all that's left is this pull between us, knitting us together. Through the walls, Dad gives a hacking cough, the faint smell of weed seeping through the door, and the spell breaks. Some invisible cloche lifts from around us. Reality rushes back in. Sleep well, I tell him. He holds an arm out, gesturing me toward his room.
You too.
And I do. I dream about fireworks, about cool hands, the rasp of a jaw, the taste of ginger, and smell of wood smoke. After work on Friday, I meet Dad and Starfire at a brewery Miles told them about. With Ashley recovering from her trip to Sedona, Julia having flown back to Chicago earlier that afternoon, and her brother already clocked in at Cherry Hill, it's just the three of us. I'm grateful that Miles recommended a place with giant Jenga and a bocce court on the patio, so we have something to do other than stare directly into each other's eyes. They fill me in on their day exploring the dunes, for which Starfire has donned a gauzy, dramatically patterned maxi dress that makes her look like one of the Real Housewives on a desert vacation. She shows me roughly 200 pictures of sand before Dad gently turns the conversation toward my day. It was pretty standard stuff, I say. We had a puzzle swap this morning. One patron showed up with a custom puzzle she'd had made of her 30-year-old boudoir shots, and another tried to walk out with three Star Wars puzzles hidden inside his trench coat.
Sounds like you've got quite a cast of characters, Dad says, tossing his final bocce ball of the round down the sandy lane.
The library is like the single best cross-section of humanity, I tell him. You meet all kinds of interesting people.
And here I thought you were in it for the free books. Dad teases.
I'm surprised how normal this feels, how nice it is to imagine this version of my father, the one who asks questions about my work, who not only shows up for my birthday but thinks to tell the server to bring a cake with a sparkler stuck in it, sticking around. And yes, the attention from paid strangers forced to sing on my behalf is fairly far from any gift I'd ever want, but it strikes me as the kind of thing normal dads do. Year-round fathers who measure their kids on door jams and teach them to ride bikes and drive them to their first ER visit. He's still the dad I've always known, too. The one who managed, today at the dunes, to just bump into someone who owns an entire hotel on Mackinac Island and bond over a shared love of the Grateful Dead to the extent that the hotelier gave Dad his phone number and promised to hook him and Starfire up with free rooms anytime they wanted. But he's also asking,
"What's your favorite thing you do at the library?"
And he's listening with interest as I tell him about the readathon, about the sponsorships I've gotten, about how happy Harvey was about the cash donations Miles has helped me rack up.
Your passion, Starfire says, hand to her heart. Just like your father's.
And he's giving her hand a squeeze, saying,
No, she's way better than her old man. She's always had direction.
I don't totally understand it, why his pride in me matters, but it does. It matters. After dinner, he suggests we visit Miles at Cherry Hill, so we leave our car at the brewery to pick up later and take a cab up the peninsula. The winery is bustling. Miles waves at us from behind the bar, but he's too busy to come talk. He murmurs something to Katya, who flags us down at the very end of the bar, sliding an open bottle and three glasses over. On the house, she shouts over the noise. We take our bottle and glasses out to the circular tables on the lawn, the sky turning periwinkle at the edges while the sun holds on for a few more breaths. I scan the lawn. No open tables.
Chairs are bad for you anyway, Starfire replies,
a curious but confident pronouncement. She removes her bedazzled sandals and lowers herself to the ground. Dad and I follow suit. With the sitting, not the shoe removal. But the grass is so intoxicatingly cool that I don't blame her for wanting to feel it between her toes. Dad pours the wine, then passes out our glasses, and there we watch the colors melt across the sky.
"I could see us here, Star," Dad says,
and she sighs.
"Me too. We should ask Karen what she thinks."
"Karen?" I say.
"Our psychic,"
Starfire says. "The one who told you about the Titanic," I verify. She nods.
"That's why we were so surprised about you and Miles. Karen told us you and Miles would go the distance. She's never been wrong before."
Not sure how Starfire has confirmed that her past life was indeed an Oscar-winning film, but I let it go. Even as the lawn clears and the tables empty and the sky goes dark, we stay half reclined on the grass, watching the string lights pop on, listening to the occasional bat flap past. When Miles clocks out, he brings us a half bottle of red left over from his shift and pours each of us a small glass. Dad proposes a toast.
"To our gracious hosts."
Starfire adds,
"To my beautiful new family."
I feel a twinge of guilt. Like I'm betraying Mom if I let Dad back in? Or maybe just fear that I'm doing what I swore I never would, making space in my heart for someone whom experience has taught me not to trust. People change, I think. I can. Dad can. Miles shifts in the grass beside me, his knee brushing mine like a question. "Are you there? Are you okay?" I can be. I can be here, in the moment, instead of watching for smoke, ready to run. I lift my glass into the ring we've formed. To family. 27. Saturday, August 3rd, 14 days until the readathon. Two things happen Saturday morning. First, Ashley calls out sick, and Landon has to fill in for her. Second, a storm rolls in, driving everyone in Waning Bay inside, and most, it would seem, of the under-8 crowd into the library. I'm kept running right up until it's time to start gathering story hour supplies, at which point the automatic doors whoosh open, carrying a distant rumble of thunder and a sideways sheet of rain inside, along with Miles Nowick. He stops on the mat inside the doors to rustle his wet hair, like a dog shaking out post-bath, and I suppress a deeply charmed grin. When he looks up and catches me watching him, though, he doesn't return the smile. Mine dissipates as he approaches and sets a cup on my desk.
"Brought you tea."
"Thanks." I can tell he's waiting, so I take a sip, the spicy sweetness zinging from the back of my tongue to the base of my spine.
"Delicious,"
I confirm.
"Did you come all the way here to bring me this?"
He gives a flimsy grin.
"I came all the way here to hear a story."
I lean around him, half expecting to see an ostrich feather clad Starfire and my Canadian tuxedo dad in tow. Miles glances down at his hands braced against the desk and clears his throat.
So they're not coming," I say.
"Are they?" He inhales slowly. My stomach's sinking. I do my best to intercept it. "It's not a big deal. If anything, it's a relief. I always feel awkward being observed by non-library people during story hour. Now I can finish my workday in peace and meet Dad and Starfire at the axe-throwing bar she was so excited about." Miles is still looking at me like I'm a puppy whose paw he's just accidentally stomped on. "It's fine," I assure him. "I'm reading a book aloud to some kids. It's not my Broadway debut."
"No, I know, it's..."
His gaze cuts over my shoulder and back to me again.
"You should probably get set up, right?"
The way he says it, I can feel the gap where something unsaid hovers. My heart speeds. "What is it?"
"Nothing," he says. "It can wait."
"You're freaking me out," I say.
"That's not what I'm trying to do," he says.
"But it's what you're doing." I say. Just tell me what's going on or I won't be able to concentrate.
He leans away from the desk, hands gripping the edge, and blows out a breath.
I didn't think this through.
Miles!
They left, Daphne.
Left? I say. Who?
Your parents, he says. Your dad and Starfire. They got a last-minute invitation to meet some friends up in Mackinac.
I glance toward my phone. It's on the desk, face up. No new messages. No explanation. Of course there isn't. There never is. The explanation is implied. Something better came along. There is no reason for me to feel surprised. There is every reason to feel nothing. This is what I should have expected. Last-minute invitation, Miles said, to meet some friends up in Mackinac. The friend he made yesterday, no doubt. Some guy who owns a hotel and likes the Grateful Dead. At least, that's my guess if I had to make one. And I do, because Dad didn't tell me himself.
Miles murmurs,
he left you a note.
I flip my phone face down, searching for today's Story Hour books among the mess, but my hands feel clumsy, like my brain's just learning how to operate them.
I told him to call, Miles says.
I find the books, the smallest bit of relief seeping into me at the feeling of something solid in my grip. Not his style. Miles reaches across the desk and curls one hand around my wrist, running his thumb over my veins.
I'm sorry. I should have waited to tell you.
I can't help a snort. No, really, Miles. It's better that I know now. Otherwise, I would have kept waiting for him to show up. Waiting, waiting, waiting. You should get to work, I say. I don't want to be seen like this. I want to be left alone with my embarrassment and hurt. In the end, it was relatively easy to let go of Peter, to accept his actions as proof of the truth that our relationship, our life together, his feelings for me were never quite what I'd thought they were. And I stopped longing for him when I accepted this, because how could I miss someone who didn't exist? So why can't I seem to do the same thing with my father? Why can't I stop missing the dad I never had? Why is he this constant, dull ache in my heart? I knew he wouldn't change, but a part of me kept hoping I had changed enough that he couldn't hurt me, or that this new iteration of me would be the one worth sticking around for. That I'd fixed whatever's so broken in me that I can't be loved. I clear my throat. Go to work, Miles. I'm okay. Fine. 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 You can be fine. His fingers loosen. He steps back.
I called off. I thought you'd...
He trails off. I don't need you to babysit me, I snap. Then try to soften my voice. Trust me, this isn't anything new. Please, go. He studies me for a long beat. Then he leans back from the desk, letting his hands slide clear of it.
Yeah, got it.
And then he's gone. At least this time, I was the one to say goodbye first. When I get home, Miles is in his room on the phone, his voice raised in frustration, almost brittle.
I don't care, he says. You shouldn't have done that.
His voice drops to an indistinct murmur, then falls silent. I realize I've been stalled in the hallway, eavesdropping, only when his bedroom door swings open and I'm busted. He draws up short. My chest aches at the sight of him, so scruffy, so messy, so familiar. I want to hide from him, and I want to be held by him. I want to apologize for earlier, and I want to never talk about it again.
Hi,
I scrape out.
Hi,
he says. A laden moment passes. I still don't want to talk, I say. He nods. I don't even want to think, I go on. What is there to think about? My dad is exactly who he's always been, and I'm who I've always been, too. For just one night, I'd like to pretend. I'd like to be someone else, not the uptight one or the damaged one or the one who gets left. Not the one waiting or poring over Dad's note like it's an old treasure map, and if I can just interpret the faded scribbles, everything will make sense. I swallow hard. Will you take me somewhere? Miles's brow lifts in surprise.
Where do you want to go?
I swallow hard. Just somewhere I've never been. Somewhere that won't remind me of Peter or my father or any other time that I wasn't enough. I say, if you're busy, Miles cuts across me.
I'll get my keys.
For the first few minutes in his truck, he takes my request not to talk literally. I break first, my voice thick. I'm sorry I was rude. It was nice of you to rearrange your night to try to make me feel better. At a red light, he looks over. He takes a breath, then closes his mouth like he's just decided against saying something. What? I ask.
Nothing.
He lies. Come on, I urge him. Tell me.
It's just...
He shakes his head.
You always assume I'm being so selfless. Like it hasn't occurred to you I might want to hang out with you. So when you turn me down, I have to figure out if you just don't feel the same way or if you think you're doing me some kind of favor, and I never can.
My heart feels rug burned. My throat is full. I'm not sure what to say. Behind us, someone honks, and Miles' eyes return to the road. The light's green. He drives through. We pull over, a bend in the road shielding us from view, and Forrest hemming us in on the left and right. Where are we? He opens his door.
Somewhere new.
I climb out, try opening my map app on my phone. I don't have service.
This way.
Miles leads me into the woods, the ground sandy and pine-dusted. It's a long walk, half an hour at least, before the trees give way and blue-green water appears ahead of us, stretching farther than I can see, a thin band of darker blue where the sky melts into the water at the horizon. The sun hangs low and fiercely bright. I turn my head into the wind to look up the shore. In the distance, a pale outcropping of rock juts into the water, blocking this cove from view. Scraggly trees twist up from the stone at odd, whimsical angles, all of it as white as sand.
Wow,
I breathe. Miles hums agreement. I turn the other way, my gaze following the beach until the woods curve out and cut anything else off from view on our right, too. No one. Just us and a couple of time-bleached, hollowed-out pieces of driftwood strewn down the shore.
This,
he says,
is my favorite beach.
I touch my collarbone, a lump rising through my throat. The wind riffles his hair, his beard thick again, and the light catching his dark eyes makes them spark. My heart thrashes, like it's trying to get itself up above a wave, like I could drown in the sight of him. I look away and start toward the gleaming water. I undo the buttons on my top, step out of my shoes, and peel off my pants, leaving it all behind in a trail on the damp sand. I step into the water, braced for cold, but after this morning's storm moved off, the day was hot and it's left the lake balmy. The tide rocks into my shins. I want to submerge myself completely, but there's a sandbar here, so I break into a jog, the water slowing my progress, my thighs burning. Miles stands at the water's edge, shielding his eyes against the light.
Are you coming?
I shout back over the water's roar. I see him laugh, but can't hear it, and I feel robbed of the sound. He takes off his shirt and pants and comes toward me in easy, lazy strides. He picks up speed as he reaches me, water splashing up to my thighs and stomach as he catches me around the waist, hoists me off my feet. I shriek with surprised laughter, and he carries me deeper, my arms locked over his.
Don't drop me,
I say, voice fading into the crashing of the water. He swings me into his arms, carrying me outright instead of simply hauling me along.
Never,
he says. With every step, the water splashes against us, and then we're in so deep that it's lapping at me, pouring over Miles' arms to thread across my stomach. He stops and sways me back and forth, my toes trailing over the warm surface. I close my eyes, and every sensation amplifies. the sunbeams drenching my face, Miles' arms crooked beneath my back and knees, the way his breath presses his stomach against my side on every inhale, the lazy squawk of seagulls in the distance, and the grit of the sand on my feet, and a complete kind of safety. Like being in a womb, like lying on a quilt in the yard of our old house, the one we shared with Dad on a summer day, legs tickling as a roly-poly climbed over the back of my calf. Like being tucked back in the library stacks with no one around and a good selection. I let my eyes open, and now the sight of him, that messy hair, his sun-freckled face and scruffy jaw, those chocolate brown eyes, it cuts through my veins. 1,000 wakes from 1,000 little boats with miles on their sails, headed straight toward my heart. "Thanks for bringing me here," I murmur. His eyes settle softly on me. "I already told you. I didn't do it to be nice." 28. We drive home with the windows open, pine thick in the air and wind howling. At a red light, Miles looks across the dark cab, sets his hand on mine on the seat. My heart beats like a hummingbird at the back of my throat. I turn my palm up to his, let his fingers slide between mine. We hold on to each other the whole way home, across the sidewalk to our building, up the stairs. He gets the door unlocked, pulls me into the dark apartment, pushes me against the door. Our breath is shallow. My heart is battering in my chest. We're right up against the ledge we've been sliding toward all summer, and I'm still trying to talk myself down when he kisses me. A rough, breathless kiss that turns my legs to liquid, a kiss that breaks through every last bit of willpower I had. My hands slip up the back of his neck into his still damp hair, and his hips lock with mine, months of need thrumming between us. The kiss deepens, his tongue in my mouth, his teeth on my lip, his groans slipping down my throat to curl up in my low belly. His hand slides down my chest to cup me through my damp shirt, and I have no more patience. I reach for the buttons on his pants. He helps me undo them. I pull his shirt off. He does the same with mine, both cast on the floor. We crash back into one another, move into the kitchen. He walks me back against the counter, his rough hands sliding around me to undo my bra, pull it off me, then pin my hips back to the counter while he looks at me. "Gorgeous," he says raggedly. I pull him to me, gasp at the feeling of his chest flush against mine. He lifts me onto the counter and steps in closer, our bodies moving restlessly against each other, trying to find every last bit of friction, my thighs tight against his hips. Kissing him is so different now that I know him. Now I understand that the breezy, carefree Miles I first met is only his topmost layer, that his nonchalant way of moving through the world is a product of self-control. But beneath that surface, he wants. The last bite of cheesecake, the final sip of wine, the bracing cool of the lake, to be kissed, to be held, to be protected. He wants it all, even the things he'd never let himself ask for or won't let himself have. His hand sifts across the back of my head and winds into my hair as our kiss coarsens. The thrills going through my belly make me feel lightweight, helium-filled. Our teeth clink, a breathless laugh, his or mine, and then a deeper kiss. My hands down his back, my nails scraping over his goosebumped shoulders. I love how his skin feels, how it's dry from exposure to the elements and the smell of the winery never quite washes away. I want him to know that I love it, so I tell him in a whisper just beneath his ear, and he nuzzles into my throat, lets his hand graze down my chest, rolling against me until I can barely breathe. Then he lowers himself between my knees, his hands light against my legs, his mouth warm and heavy on my low stomach, the crease of my hip, and then, eyes slanting up to mine, between my thighs. I lean back onto my palms, breath quickening as he brushes my underwear aside, presses his mouth to me, murmurs my name in a low gravel that makes everything in me pull taut. I work my hips against him, his hands skating around to guide my movement until I feel like I can't breathe, can't see, like my heart might crack through my ribs if I can't have more of him.
Condoms,
I whisper. His eyes slice to mine, dark and inky.
Do you want to?
I know what he means. Not, do you want to use a condom, but do you want to do something that requires a condom? And I almost laugh, because I can't imagine it being more obvious what I want.
I do,
I say.
As long as you do.
He stands, squeezing the back of my neck.
Stay here.
When he comes back, he tosses the strip of them on the counter and pulls me back to him, a fierce, hungry kiss as we scrabble with each other's pants. I get his off first, wrap a hand around him, and his head bows into my shoulder, his muscles going tight in a way that thrills me. I gently push him back by the shoulder, our eyes connecting as I slide off the counter, kneel in front of him.
You don't have to,
he murmurs. I want to, I tell him. And I do, like I never have before. His hand flutters into my hair as I take him in my mouth, a ragged sound scraping out of his throat. He moves with me, my hands climbing up his thighs to his hips, guiding him.
Daphne,
he says gruffly, shaking his head.
No more.
Which is good, because hearing him this turned on is making it hard for me to keep going. He pulls me back up, our mouths melting together as his hands skim down me, peeling away my pants, then my underwear. For the first time, we're entirely bare together, and it's exhilarating and terrifying and sensual, having his arms wrapped around me, our thighs tangled together, feeling his pulse in so many different places as he bends to sweep a kiss along my trapezius, then another at my temple, then finally a soft kiss on my lips. For several seconds, we're tender, delicate. But soon, the need wins out. He turns me by the hips, pushes me against the counter, and wedges himself between my thighs, teasing me until I'm practically crying, pushing myself back against him, pleading with him. I hear the tear of foil packaging and strain eagerly back against him, and seconds later, finally, he's pushing slowly into me. And I am crying out, my whole back alive with goosebumps as his hands drag down me, settle at my hips, guiding me back to him feverishly. He slides one hand around my waist to nestle between my thighs as we move together. The counter's edge digs in my waist, his fingertips score into my hip.
More,
I say. There's no such thing as enough. He withdraws long enough to turn me back to him. We clamber back together for several dizzying, desperate seconds, and then we're on the kitchen floor, and he's biting me, and I'm licking him, and my thighs are wound around his waist, our skin slick with sweat, his hips bucking into me, like I've wanted, like I've needed. I realize I've said it aloud when he answers.
You have no idea how badly I've wanted this, Daphne, how much I've needed you.
Miles,
I beg. It feels like more than just my body that's about to come apart, like my heart is splitting at the seams, and it's a terrifying, vulnerable feeling to break in front of him in this way, to be so unexpectedly and wholly at his mercy. His hands come up to cup my face, our bodies keeping pace.
I know,
he whispers.
I've got you.
So I let go. I break, every last knot coming undone. And he bites down on my shoulder as he shudders into me too. The waves of sensation roar through me, the sound of our breath rushing into my ears and light dancing across the back of my eyelids. The waves draw back, our hearts still thundering, and he slides off of me, pulls me into a curl against his chest as we catch our breath. I fling an arm over my eyes, as a ludicrous wave of laughter overtakes me.
Daphne,
Miles says, voice hoarse with alarm.
What's wrong?
He moves my arm down so he can meet my eyes.
Nothing,
I get out.
Then why are you laughing?
He says, dubious. I hardly understand my own reaction.
Because I'm happy, I guess.
His smile widens. He leans down to kiss me, a sweet brush of his lips that lingers. I'm smiling too, our teeth lightly clinking. He brushes my sweat-streaked hair away from my forehead.
You're amazing,
he says quietly, which makes me laugh again. He casts a sleepy smile sidelong at me.
What's so funny about that?
I say, you just make it sound like I did acrobatics.
You might have, he says. I blacked out for a few seconds in the middle there.
I turn my face into his chest, chortling. His hand sweeps down my spine and back up, tucking itself at the base of my neck beneath my sweaty hair.
I actually did, he says.
I think I did too, I admit.
Why was it like that?
He says, which makes me laugh more, a heavy, relaxing hum of emotion through my heavy, relaxed limbs. I don't know, I say. There's a long silence, his hand moving lazily over my hair, our breath in sync. Then he asks,
are you hungry?
For some reason, this makes my heart feel like it's about to burst. Starving. I take a quick shower and put on pajamas while Miles starts making banana chocolate chip pancakes. When I'm done, I take over while he rinses off too, then pads back into the room in nothing but a pair of sweatpants and one new hickey I have no memory of giving him. Oh my God, I'm sorry, I say, touching the spot on his collarbone.
Don't be.
He takes the spatula from me with one hand and brushes the hair away from my neck with his other.
You're going to be wearing turtlenecks for weeks.
He flips the last couple of pancakes onto the waiting plates, and we eat them there, standing up. Then he slides his empty plate away onto the counter and asks,
do you want to talk about it now?
Talk about what? I say.
Your dick, Dad,
he replies. Maybe you didn't notice, I say, but that dick is essentially universally loved.
By strangers, Miles says, by people who don't know him or need anything from him. Excuse me if I don't find that impressive.
Well, you wouldn't, I say, because everyone instantly loves you too. I'm the one here people don't want around. He shakes his head, frowning.
Do you know how often you do that?
Do what? I ask.
Act like my opinion doesn't matter to you,
he says. My jaw drops. Of course it matters.
Everything I say, he replies. It's like, oh, of course you'd say that, Miles. You're just nice. Or, you don't get it because you're you. Or, my new favorite, you're just like my asshole dad.
That's not what I meant, I say. At all.
You said no one wants you around, he replies. What about me?
What about you, I say.
Me wanting you doesn't count?
He asks, brows knitted together. A fiery heat wave, a series of them, one after another. Me wanting you, me wanting you, me wanting you. It counts, I say. It's terrifying how much it counts. I set my plate aside. What about you?
Me,
he says. I heard your phone call, I confess. He's quiet, thoughtful, for several seconds.
It was my dad.
I start. Your dad?
He's been trying to call me nonstop, he says, from phone numbers that I don't have blocked, so he could tell me to get Juliet to call him back.
I gawk. I don't understand.
Turns out they've been talking, he says, which I'm guessing she didn't tell me because she knew it would stress me out, waiting for him to fuck her over again, which he did. He figured out where Jules worked because she still lets him follow her on social media, which I warned her about, and he told our mom. She showed up at the restaurant, upset Julia bad enough that she walked out, got fired, blocked my dad, and got on an airplane here, not necessarily in that order, and now he's harassing me to try to get her to forgive him.
Oh my God, Miles, I say. That's terrible.
I'm sorry.
He rubs the bridge of his nose. Why? I ask. He shrugs.
I don't want to dump this on you.
You're not dumping it on me, I promise.
I'm used to keeping all of this separate, and nothing is with you. You're my roommate and my best friend and the woman I just slept with.
My eyes burn. I try to blink away the feeling.
He's looking at me like he's trying to strain something out of me. Daphne, you're my best friend, too. It comes out as a throaty whisper. That's why today was so hard, when my dad left. My throat twists, my voice wobbling. Because you saw it. And it makes me feel pathetic. Even more so because the truth is, if he turned around and came right back here, I'd be thrilled. I'd forgive him again and again, just hoping that eventually I'd actually mean something to him. I'd call and beg him to come back if I thought there was a chance he'd say yes. But I can't because I know he won't. And I don't want to hear that. I don't want him to prove that I'm trying to find alternate words. Because just saying these feels like codifying the truth into existence. It's painful to push them past the knot in my throat, but holding them in all these years hasn't made me feel better, hasn't made them less true, hasn't stanched the bleeding or numbed the pain. That I'm not worth it. Hey. Miles's arms come around me, his heat and spicy ginger scent soaking into me. A part of me is just waiting, I rasp. For the moment when you see whatever it is that drives people away. And I don't want that. I don't want you to stop wanting me around. I think it might break my heart to be someone you don't like. Fuck. Daphne. His hands come up to my face. Do you want to know why your dad doesn't stick around? Tears sting the back of my nose, but I nod. It's the question I've never been able to stop asking, no matter how badly it hurts. Because you see him, Miles says, and he can't stand it. And Peter's the same shit with a different outfit, so bored with himself, he convinced himself that being with someone like Petra would turn him into someone else, without, like, having to be brave enough to try acid. He was bored with me, Miles, I say. If it was about you, he says, he could have ended it. Instead, he blew up his life. That's about him. I've been that guy a dozen times with a dozen people I didn't deserve. It's easy to be loved by the ones who've never seen you fuck up, the ones you've never had to apologize to, and who still think all your quirks are charming. It's easy to be around people who don't know you. But as soon as someone starts to figure you out, as soon as you can't be perfect, it's easier to move on. Find someone new to be the cool, fun, laid-back one with. So that's it? My voice crackles. I make people feel like their worst selves. Daphne, no. He pulls me in against him, his face buried in my neck. God, no. When he draws back, tense dimples have pricked his scruffy jaw. Look, I've always wanted to be that fun, easy person with no baggage, even with Petra. But after a while, someone either finally sees you or they don't. And either way, it fucking sucks. Because if they see you and it's not what they signed up for, then they're out of there. And if they never see you, it's worse. Because you're just alone. And I loved Petra, he says. But deep down, I knew as soon as things stopped being fun, she'd be gone. And she was. She found something more romantic, more perfect, just more. I think you're the first person who's really seen me. Past what I want people to see. You make the people you care about feel like... He pauses. Like you want all of them, not just the good parts. And that's terrifying to someone who spent a lifetime avoiding those other pieces of themselves. I don't want to scare people off, I say, throat aching. He shakes his head. It's worth being scared. Trust me. You're worth it. He kisses the center of my palm. Heat gathers in my belly. It builds between us. Just standing here in the kitchen with him is in the top three most erotic moments of my life. I lift my face, and he brushes his nose back and forth against mine. You're worth it, Daphne, he says, hand soft on my jaw and eyes closed. Miles, I whisper. I do. I say, I do want all those parts of you. His eyes open, molten, warm. Good, he says. They want you to. Then he kisses me. It's perfect. No, better than that. It's every part of him at once.
My room or yours?
I ask him.
Yours,
he says. First, yours. 29. Sunday, August 4th, 13 days until the readathon. I sleep late on Sunday, and when I do wake, Miles is still in my bed, one arm over me. I stretch my sore limbs in every direction, and he stirs. Through a smile, one eye open, he croaks, "Hey." My heart flutters drunkenly. "Hey." He snuggles closer, setting his cheek against my stomach.
"What time is it?"
"Noon," I tell him.
"Shit."
He tips his face up to look at me.
"Are you hungry?"
"Since I met you," I say, "constantly." We spend the day in a dreamy daze. We drink our tea and coffee on the rug in front of the open windows, sunshine on our faces. When we finish, we make refills and do it again. For lunch, we walk down the street to a sandwich shop, eat on a bench by the bike trail. Everything feels impossibly normal, easy between us. We go to Miles's favorite walk-up soft-serve place and get ice cream covered in roughly chopped candy bars, eat it as we wander to his truck. We drive to the Sunday farmer's market and buy what we need to make cauliflower tacos, or what he needs, rather, because I have no idea what I'm doing, just following his directions while a very sad but hauntingly beautiful Glen Campbell song plays on his Bluetooth speaker, the windows still open, a breeze rustling through the apartment. After we eat, he pulls me into his lap at the kitchen table and kisses me like he's in no rush, like we have all the time in the world. And it feels true, like there is no world, no passing time.
"Want to sleep over?"
he teases, brushing his nose against mine. "Am I invited?" I ask.
"Open invitation," he says. "Anytime you want."
In his room, we tangle in his wood smoke-scented sheets, hands in hair, nails raving over skin. When he pushes into me at last, I accidentally gasp, "Wow!" A new-to-me reaction to sex I expect to make him laugh. Miles just nods, as if agreeing, sneaks a hand under my neck and kisses me again, so tenderly I could almost cry. Then I'm a little bit worried I actually am going to cry, which is also a new experience, but my heart just feels so raw. Like the whole day is catching up to me, or the last 4 months, or maybe longer, decades of feeling braced against the world, and now I can't find that sensation, the layer between me and everyone else, and it's terrifying and freeing and intense. We move slowly, heavily, and every time one of us reaches a tipping point, we turn. Rearrange, find new ways to hold each other, to move together. Lying on our sides, him behind me, his arm draped over my hip and his hand tucked between my thighs, he murmurs my name like it's an exclamation, the sound you make after a perfect sip of wine. I knew being with him like this would be good and fun and maybe even funny, but I'm surprised how my chest keeps twinging, like my feelings have too much weight and my rib cage might crack under them. I keep catching myself just before the words can tip over my lips, "I love you." It's too soon. It's too complicated. For once, I don't want to be anywhere but in this moment, not thinking about what it all means or where it might go. And he makes that easy, this sunlit man. Miles kisses my shoulder, my neck, my jaw as the intensity builds. He notices when I start to lose control, to move faster. He holds my hips tight and bucks to meet me hard and deep, and I've never felt anything quite like this before. Like there's no boundary between us, like he's in my mind and heart and soul, and I want to keep him there even as I know this moment can't last. We're cresting, and when we do, we'll float back down into reality, into our two separate bodies. But right now, he's entirely mine, and I'm his. In the night, I get up to pee, and when I come back, Miles is splayed out in the middle of the bed, arm outstretched like he'd been reaching for me in his sleep. Seeing him there, lit by the moon, sends a crushing tenderness through me. I tiptoe through the chilly room, climb into bed as gracefully as I can, but he still wakes enough to sleepily drape an arm around my waist and haul me into the warm nook of his body.
"You were gone,"
he murmurs.
"Now I'm back,"
I whisper. With a low, drowsy hum, he kisses my shoulder and drifts back to sleep. 30. Monday, August 5th, 12 days until the readathon. In the morning, I don't wake Miles. As much as I would like to spend the morning making out, we were up late, and I'll see him when he picks me up from work anyway. He'd texted Katya last night to see if she wanted his shift, and she'd replied, "Not at all, but I need money, so I'll take it." And so we'd decided to get dinner and drive up to a dark sky park. While I'm dressing, I spot the note from Dad sitting on my dresser. When I was younger, I would have read it over and over, scouring for proof that he loved me or clues about what I'd done to drive him off. Today, I just toss it into the trash on my way out. I feel like Belle in the beginning of Beauty and the Beast, walking around with a shit-eating grin, greeting everyone like it's the first day of the rest of my life. I'd be less obvious wearing an "I've had great sex" sandwich board. I stop at Fika for tea and order Ashley a latte too, when Jonah hands it back to me. A realization hits like a gong, reverberating through my bones. Ashley. I was supposed to paint with Ashley. On my way out the door, I open my calendar and scan for her birthday. Only I never added Ashley's birthday to my calendar. I've barely added anything in weeks, just like the whiteboard's gone to the wayside. An icy fist presses against the bottom of my stomach. It was this past Saturday, I'm positive. She called in sick, I remember then, which triggers another nauseating lurch in my gut. She was sick on her birthday, and I didn't even check in on her. How could I forget about her? How could I let this happen? I practically run the rest of the way to work and get there right as Ashley's locking her hatchback. As I jog toward her, something flashes in her eyes, too quickly to read, and my heart turns over painfully as her expression settles back into neutrality. I come to a stop, choke out, "Hey." When she doesn't say anything, I hold her coffee out to her. She looks at it, her hand tightening on her purse strap for a second, before grudgingly accepting it. "I'm so sorry," I blurt out. "About Saturday, my dad was in town and then he left really abruptly and I was completely distracted and Miles and I, God, I'm really sorry." She snorts, shakes her head. "You know," she says, "it was your idea to do something for my birthday. You insisted. And weirdly, you even got me excited about it." "I know," I say. "You shouldn't have been homesick alone on your birthday. I understand why you're upset with me." "I wasn't sick," she says. "I took the day off." "You never take the day off," I point out. "Which is why I did, for my birthday,"